Greetings, Sleepy Salsa here on this Monday, September 3rd of 2012, and welcome to the 57th episode of the Last Bastille Podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicize's A Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bosa's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under, and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille. Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. TheLastBastille.wordpress.com. And for this particular episode, we are going to cover another essential concept, that is, the fundamental bare-bones basics of what must be understood if humanity is to ever reassert self-determination. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are going to look at another phenomenon of the actual system itself. And I'd like to read for you an article that was originally published at the Last Bastille blog, originally on July 5th of 2012, entitled Compartmentalization. The establishment enjoys deceiving, inveigling, and obfuscating the truth. Without a clear understanding of reality and our situation, we are doomed to suffer from illusions. It is impossible to resist much of anything if you don't know how it all hangs together. To compartmentalize information is to fracture data among such disparate sources in such a manner so as to render an accurate conception of a particular phenomenon incomplete and grossly misunderstood. Compartmentalizing information is a variation on a theme of the Freemasonic revelation of the method. The establishment is obligated to tell you explicitly what they are going to do or what they are doing to you, but they allow themselves enough leeway to fracture such admissions of guilt so as to deflect accusations from the grassroots towards any one comprehensive source. A related method of fracturing information is to vary what kind of content is sent out over which communications mediums. Generally speaking, the corporate whore mainstream media tends to be more honest in the written form than they are in the audible one, and more honest in the audible medium than they are visually. Given the disparities that arise from the varying effects of predictive programming, amongst the three main communications mediums, television and movies are more effective than radio, which in turn is more effective than newspapers. Assuming this is accurate, then most of the more honest admissions of guilt are much more likely to be found in the establishment's own books, articles, and magazines than they are to be found in either their radio broadcasts or especially their own TV shows and movies. Now, a common claim used by alternative media personalities is on the one hand to say, "I've got the documents," or "CNN and Fox admitted that this awful thing really did happen," yet simultaneously claim, "The mainstream media lies all of the time." Such assertions, without attempting to either reconcile the initial contradictions or disprove them, is intellectually lazy and dishonest. What should have been mentioned right from the beginning is that, yes, the mainstream media does lie most of the time, willingly and intentionally. But they will also honestly admit the establishment's crimes in a fractured manner, as they are required to do by their own code. No wonder many political dissidents, or potential dissidents, decide to discontinue seeing through the fog, because the inept behavior of various alternative media personalities turned them off to even trying to figure out the basics of how the establishment really works. The mainstream media's use of compartmentalization is performed with the express purpose of confusing people to the point that they give up trying to understand what the hell is going on in the first place. As a failsafe, should there be people stubborn and determined enough to wade through the disinformation, consider also all the time and effort expended on that instead of on something else that, methodologically speaking, would be more effective at securing our liberties. There is a time and a place for sifting through misinformation, but not every activist needs to do that. Political dissidents would do well to heed to the economic concept of the division of labor. Individuals and organizations who decide to specialize in the sifting of data from the oligopolized media do in fact save considerable manpower and increase everyone else's efficiency. To be fair, compartmentalization as a technique is not always used for evil. The copious methods that privacy advocates suggest people use are fundamentally based in fracturing information. The critical difference here is that compartmentalization is used in this application as a technique for exercising your liberties instead of being used for the legitimization of state power through mass deception. In order to overcome compartmentalization, it would be best for your average citizen serf to stop consuming mainstream propaganda channels entirely and instead examine the true diversity of thought that is expressed in the alternative media. While not everything expressed is always objectively accurate, the alternative media as a whole provides a real opportunity for individuals to tackle the six blind men and the elephant problem. By applying your own critical faculties to a truly wide range of data, you are much more likely to arrive at realistic conclusions about the true problems that we must overcome. And again, that was my article on compartmentalization. And now I'd like to give a brief postscript. As time has gone on, there have been attempts, whether through talking with neighbors or more commonly using the internet, of connecting the dots, if you will. And there has been a lot of advances with that. And I'm not criticizing that at all. I mean, that does need to be done. The main problem that I've, and others who will not go public about this because they don't want to piss off the Patriot rock stars, so to speak, is that, and this will, and I'm going to be dealing with this in upcoming podcasts, but I've also kind of mentioned this before in earlier episodes, you know, not everything that comes down the pike is objectively valid. There is a rumor mill of sorts, which is kind of a problem because now you have all these bits of data. There was the old example about, you know, so many, you know, Russian troops are south of the U.S.-Mexican border on the Mexican side. And, you know, this lie has been repeated many, many times over, but a lot of times it wouldn't be promulgated through any one source or any one thing. It'd always be like fractured little bits here and there. And really it was just disingenuous, totally from start to finish. And so that's what is kind of a problem, too. If you decide, or if you just need to, in a very limited way for your own purposes, if you need to connect dots, so to speak, and overcome compartmentalization, at least of fractured data, it would really behoove everyone to study rhetoric, and I would say more importantly, basic syllogistic logic. But of course, you know, because of the public fool system, if you weren't taught that, which most of us weren't, then you wouldn't even know where to start. You couldn't, it would be kind of like that, I remember in that one anthropology class I took during my foolish years in college, there was a documentary the professor showed, it was some stupid thing on PBS, and it was about evolution or some such thing. There was this one paleontologist who admitted, we don't even know how to interpret all the evidence we already have. Think about that. We don't know how to interpret the evidence we already have. Now, without getting into the side issue of intelligent design and evolution, which is really not the point of this particular episode, the point was that that paleontologist admitted that there was so much data that good, bad, indifferent, who knows, just all these fossils and whatever, they couldn't even begin to figure out how to interpret it. And that's a lot. And so on one hand, it's kind of the internet and non-oglobalized sources of press, if you will. It's a double-edged sword. Yes, we do need freedom of the press. Yes, we do need free speech. Absolutely. That's without question. The problem is, on the other hand, because there is such an information overload, there's bound to be reports or conjectures that slip through the cracks, and then because they're never validated or verified by anyone, or if they are, they're, then some other cowards would say, oh, you're COINTELPRO, you're FBI, you're a Fed, blah, blah, all this stupid nonsense. Then the rumor continues with whatever it is. I mean, I've been advised in private conversations not to speak on certain subjects, and I'll try and hold off on it as long as I can, which is why I'm not using as example this go-around. But suffice it to say, I mean, even when somebody double-checks very commonly known things and say, hey, this didn't turn out, and no, I'm not taking the government side, really, it didn't happen, this is untrue, these other aspects are true, because they stood up to verification and double-checking and so forth, and we did overcome compartmentalization by combining all these little different, data points. But there are these other pieces of data which, if you look at the sources, were totally bogus or just plain wrong or sometimes even disinfo. And then the cowards come out of the woodwork and say, "Oh no, you're not involved in the truth movement or the patriot cause or whatever. You're some government stooge." And it's like, what proof do you have of that? You have no proof. Who's the handler? Well, what's the handling agency? Where's the proof of payment? Or in the case of a state's evidence witness type, where's the plea agreement? But you see, that's kind of a problem, is that a lot of nouveau patriot types and other assorted political dissidents, it's not like there's like a course everybody takes. I mean, the mainline public doesn't understand this. When you decide to go against the establishment in your own way, according to your own philosophical outlook, there is no like handbook that everybody reads. There's different, lots of handbooks for lots of different things, and those are up on the blog, obviously, in the document section. But there isn't like a central one, like the All-American Political Dissidence Handbook. I mean, it doesn't exist. So, I mean, unless you want to count the Bill of Rights, but that's technically a government document. But I mean, that's where we're at. And so I just find it amazing that there is this kind of horizontal control mechanism of sorts, even if it's unintentional, that serves to keep the other, some of the dissidents will police the other dissidents. And I don't mean in a good way. I mean, this is a destructive way. It's not even policing. It's name-calling. I mean, I'm the guy that coined the term internal balkanization. Vernacularly, it's known as infighting. Other individuals have called it division, whatever. I mean, it's the same phenomenon, just different terms for the same thing. And, I mean, I'm covering balkanization in about 2 episodes from now, normal balkanization. But, I mean, this is what it's come to. This is exactly what it's come to. And so, no, you shouldn't badmouth somebody who's legitimately trying to do good research. What you should be doing is working collaboratively with them, especially when you come up with pieces of evidence that contradict each other, or seem to. But then we get into issues, and I don't want to get too deep. I've started to get a little too deeply into here, but suffice it to say, if you come across somebody, let me just use a brief example, and this is commonly known, and I don't think I'm going to get a lot of flack for this too much. But some people say that the German National Socialists were the good guys. And other people say, well, they were still bad guys according to mainline history, but, they were just stooges for the bankers or something. Well, you know, maybe some of those researchers for that are pretty much pushing the one theme according to the evidence they've seen, and the other guys pushing that are pushing the other thing based on the evidence they've seen, maybe they should, like, I don't know, compare notes. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it turned out there was some misinformation on both sides that they unwittingly just accepted because they didn't know any better. And maybe there's some good data on both sides. And maybe the truth is really something completely different. Who knows? That's one example. I mean, that was something that happened in the 20s, 30s, and early 40s. Last century. You know, it kind of begs the question. I mean, contemporary history would tell you that the Third Reich were a bunch of white supremacist racists, but then Veronica Clark comes out with a book that was about black Nazis. So how does that make sense? We now have a contradiction. How do you resolve, and this is also deals with compartmentalization too, especially when you have different fractured bits of data, is how do you resolve cognitive dissonance? I would suggest maybe comparing notes as a starting point. I don't see how this is difficult. And interestingly enough, on those other subjects, when different investigative reporters, bloggers, researchers, etc., did compare notes, a lot of times by working mutually together and double checking each other's work, kind of like being a devil's advocate, but you do it for each other's stuff. That is a kind of a filtering mechanism of sorts that's very much based on free market principles, big time. And that's the other thing, too. I mean, you know, Thomas Jefferson once said that I'd rather have newspapers without government than a government without newspapers, or something to that effect. Basically, that we need to have essentially not governments dictate what historical events are, and even, I mean, there are even some other countries where, I think it was in Germany, a few other places, where if you criticize the events of the Holocaust, you go to prison. It's just like, why? Why not instead have free, you know, through the mechanisms of the free market, specifically the free marketplace of ideas, why not use that natural filtering mechanism when done properly? Why not do that so you can sift the good and the bad ideas? The founders talked about this too. And now I'm using the one thing as an example, but I'm just saying you don't need the initiation of aggressive coercion by government to dictate what people are allowed to talk about. Because obviously if you control language, you control people's thoughts. And if you do that, then why bother trying to figure out the truth of anything for that matter? Because even during your investigation of it, even if you're just a run-of-the-mill citizen journalist type or whatever, or a quote-unquote professional or what have you, it wouldn't matter. Government steps in, thought police step in, you're not allowed to talk about that, look at that book, get that article, and that's the end of it. I mean, why all this emphasis on, the government must dictate what people think? You know, and here's the other aspect to it, too. I don't think a lot of people get towards or really understand. Maybe it's not a bad thing for people to disagree about certain historical events. I mean, Lord knows that history is written by the victors, at least mainline history is. And Lord knows between different variants of how history is written, histiography, basically. You have got determinism and revisionism, all these different things. Why should one version enjoy government privilege and another version, even if it's wrong, why should that be considered a thought crime, literally? Why not just rely on the free market principles of, like, vetting and ostracism, peer pressure, moral approbation, that kind of thing, technically all of which are voluntary and non-coercive. Why not have those dynamics put in place, persuasion, if you will. Not this mainstream media thing where it's, mind control type stuff, but I mean, like, generally, like, you talk to your neighbor. You talk to other people who are legitimately trying to figure out just what the fuck is going on. Whatever it happens to be. And this is what bothers me most of all, is this fake Madison Avenue notion. Edward Bernays would be proud that we need to, that we, meaning just people in common, individuals, etc., the 300 some odd million individuals that inhabit these United States, the American tax farm, if you will, that we need to rely on a central distributing node of data, and that is what they tell us reality is. It completely skews your perception of this realm of existence, if you will. That's not fair at all. Part of volitional consciousness, as Ayn Rand would call it, is that you have to take responsibility for your own life, and part of that is you have to figure out just how it all fucking works. You don't have to go into every little minutia, but generally speaking, you have to make good faith effort at doing it for yourself. It's that notion of self-determination instead of just accepting whatever you're being spoon-fed. And maybe getting yourself out of the situation where you are being spoon-fed, preferably. And so if you actually read books from the library, even if it's a government library, not great, but it's a start. Even if you just read books instead of watching these video reports or these news reports that are visually dependent, and they've got all these sensory inputs that distract and confuse you, a little bit of swirling mist, some bull crap on the bottom with a ticker tape or whatever, another little graphic off to the side. Sometimes they'll show TVs within TVs if it's a really fancy studio, Anchorman will be standing up. All that. I mean, how could you pay attention? I mean, anyone who's read Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 understands that you need time to digest and really, I don't want to say memorize, but really understand the data itself. And getting and more bringing it back to compartmentalization, you need time to investigate. You need time to read the material. I mean, sometimes, depending on the level of difficulty and depending on your own cognitive capabilities, you might need to read the same shit 2, 3, 4, 5 times over if it's particularly difficult, especially if it's government documents where it's written in this awful, like, legalese. Lord knows I've had to do that. And then, eureka, now I understand. It's some crazy batshit stuff. I mean, I remember when I did the review on Oliver Wendell Holmes's The Common Law. That was a really difficult book to read because Holmes is not that good of an author, like I said in the review. So, I would say people really need to start off with is really studying rhetoric, syllogistic logic, preferably traditional logic, not the stuff they teach in the universities where it's this, you have to learn De Morgan's or something. That's stupid. No, I mean, know how to put together a two-premise, like a three-part syllogism, two premises and a conclusion. Like, for example, the typical one, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. But you need to understand why that is and why it's logically valid and sound. And what I mean when I say they are, it is valid and sound. I mean, you have to understand all this. Because if you don't have the tools, if you were never taught how to evaluate data of any kind, how can you tackle the necessary, although in some ways gargantuan, task of interpreting previously compartmentalized data? How could you even start? It's kind of like telling somebody to dig a hole without a shovel. I guess you could do it with your bare hands, but gee whiz, you would be more efficient, better quality, faster, etc., 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 if you had a friggin' shovel. Or a bulldozer, or whatever. That's kind of the equivalent here. And unfortunately, most dissidents are pretty much at this point, in terms of overcoming compartmentalization, most of them, from what I can see, are trying to dig holes with their hands instead of using a goddamn shovel. And here I am, I'm trying to upgrade to a bulldozer. Now, it obviously isn't just me. There's other people I know, obviously, that are good folk. But, I mean, this is the kind of moronicness that we're dealing with. I mean, I'm making good faith effort. I know a lot of you listening are making good faith effort. But at some point, cognitive dissonance has to be resolved. At some point. At least on some issues, it does. So I wanted to just have, I know that was a little bit of a longer postscript, but that's something I obviously feel strongly about, because if you don't even know even the problems of what we're dealing with, the situation we're suffering under, as I phrase it, you can't even get to the problem-solving stage, which is what I like to focus on, because you don't even know what the tyrannical actions are in the first place, because you don't know how to analyze the information. I mean, I've done this for years, even before I was even slightly well-known. And now we fast forward about a decade later to right now, in 2012, and it's just the same moronic stuff over and over again. And this is even before we get into the carnival of distractions, which I'll save for another time. In any case, for next episode, we will continue seeing through the fog of illusion by exploring another essential concept, that of incrementalization, also known as the boiling frog phenomenon. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.